bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour is presented by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. And don't forget about the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, Wednesday, August 7th, Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They take great care of your insurance needs and do everything they can to save you money. It's all at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. All right. So, let's now bring in Tuesdays with Neil, with the outstanding, informative, and insightful Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
As always, it's great to be here. Happy draft week to you and everyone else out there who celebrates.
All right, so on happy draft week, as you and I know, something starts in the draft and then a run starts because panic, of course, then ensues. I think that's a fair way of putting it. So what has the potential to start a run at a position in your mind when you look at and analyze this?
I don't know if we call it starting a run, but I know certainly ending the run is going to be the Arizona Cardinals, the fourth pick. I don't know how we know who Chicago's taking. I don't know how Washington or New England walks away from two or three selecting a quarterback. And I mean both of those things. They're keeping those picks and they're taking a quarterback. At that point, you have to ask yourself how much does anybody want J.J. McCarthy? And I would say that in itself technically ends a run, but the draft really starts at that point. You know, there's a boatload of talent in other positions outside of the quarterback. And not saying that you know, we're not comparing the two. I just mean that that's a big need for the first three teams in this draft. And it's pretty clear that that's the direction they're going to go in. After that, who really is the number one? And I think, in a way, you could say it's Marvin Harrison Jr. I might argue it's Malik Nabers, to be honest with you. But right there, if you're the Chargers picking next, you've got kind of the run of the board. So can you set up something else? Is it going to be another receiver right after that? I think it would be. That's the direction I would go if I was either Arizona or Los Angeles heading into this draft. So then you're talking about Dunze at that point. Where is he going to go? Is that going to be another receiver? You haven't taken a tackle yet. There's not a cornerback that's been taken yet. An edge rusher we haven't even talked about yet. The real run, I think, starts probably after the pick, just because I think those top five are strategically and competitively well above anybody else. And the way that those five picks are established really kind of sets up everybody else. And I think that in itself can create a bit of the panic, like you called it. You know, Joe Alt is a high-level tackle prospect. Where is he going to end up? Probably, you know, Tennessee at seven is what most people say. Is that when the tackles start? Are we going to see them falling out after that? Would the cornerbacks go after that? I think there's a lot of intrigue at that point. There's probably going to be a trade in the top 10 as well. And really kind of the linchpin of everybody is J.J. McCarthy. Where do you put him? My opinion, I don't think he's worth the fourth pick in the draft. I think he is maybe three or four, to be honest with you, as far as his position goes. But I don't think that's the way it's going to land when they're drafting. But at what point do you need to take him? Are the Broncos all in on Zach Wilson? I that's going to be the case. So are they going to look to grab a quarterback? I think he's more insurance behind a position that they really want to address with their pick. They might be too far down without enough capital to be able to move up to get somebody. So you put all that together, I think any run probably starts after five, in my opinion, whatever position they want to go. And that includes a receiver, which I think is going to go four and five. You know, those right. three quarterbacks and then two receivers, I think, are the first five picks of this draft.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it sounds to me what I think might happen. It's just a guess. But I'm also of the thought process that I would not be surprised if six quarterbacks went in the first round and that their trade. I think there's going to be trades in this first round, and I think there could be six quarterbacks. That's just me throwing a dart, and let's see where it lands.
I think they're throwing a dart as well. That's a perfect analogy for it. You've got quarterbacks with at least some one, two traits. The two at the bottom, maybe even more than that, to be honest with you. I think there are things that certain types of coaches are really going to like about Spencer Rattler. I wouldn't be surprised at all to hear his name called on day two, maybe earlier rather than later. But if you're looking at Penix and Bo Nix, there are fairly they're reasonable red flags between the two of them. But they fit so much of that prototype, what we called jokingly back in the day, the Tom Savage prototype, guys that have certain things that are locked in stone as far as what a team will assess to be valuable with the player. The play isn't as important as the physical build is. You know, they've got that size. Penix at least has he has the arm. I think he's a pretty good deep ball thrower. These things are all incredibly valuable. The reason he's not probably higher, well, two reasons he's not higher is one, he's not the youngest guy in the draft, and two, he's torn his knee 100 times or something like that. Those are problems. And just think of it, the risk that you're taking with a guy like Penix is if he tears his right ACL again, he's out for his entire rookie season. And he's going to be 35 next year. At what point is kind of the law of diminishing returns going to come in to his ceiling? Yeah. How much better can he get? Does that make him kind of a permanent fringe starter type within the NFL? That one injury can knock everything down. And it's not to say that he will or he won't. I read the letter, very compelling. I'm sure from a medical perspective he's fine. And he wants to communicate that out to as many people as he can. But that's a problem overall, and for me, they're really, you know, the best way to describe the problem is one, being that he's older, you have that injury history. You can look at the fifth-year club-controlled option for a first-round draft pick as an asset because then you can buy a year in a sense that it's a lot cheaper than the franchise tag is. And you're not spending as much cash as you would have on an extension. So if you still need to make that decision at that point, you've got club control over him, and he can't go anywhere. There's not really a whole lot that he can do. On the other, is it worth spending that capital on a player that has these question marks? Why not just take him in the second round? Well, I would argue that the teams wanting a quarterback might not be around. They might not be high up enough in the second round to go get him, but three quarterbacks going at the top of round one can help that. You thin out the demand a little bit. Because of that, though, I think your scope gets narrowed quite a bit to the point where I think teams are going to say, these are both 1-2 guys, meaning later first-round guys into the second round. They're not going to meet everything that we want in a first-round pick. But in the absence of anybody else, this is the guy that we would want. This type of player, I think they fit into that bucket fairly well. If you're the Vikings, for example, you can make the argument that they acquired 23 from Houston to see if they can move up a little bit to get a quarterback if they want. If not, they're in a great position to take at value one of the more veteran rookie quarterbacks who are out there. If that's a shot they want to take, they might do that. 23 probably makes more sense for either of those two players. 23 on back is probably more appropriate, but the fact that there would be six in that instance, I think, makes sense. But you get into, six of them, that's 20% of the league. There's a good amount of them already drafted last year into this year. There are only so many spots, and you're not going to spend a first-round pick on a guy that is going to back up whoever you already have. So it's only the teams that really need a quarterback, and three of them are out the door at the first three picks. So in my mind, it almost feels like it's going to be six or it's going to be four. and this goes into what you said earlier about panicking. If one of them goes first, my gut would be Penix would be the first one taken. Mm-hmm. I think somebody has taken Nix pretty quickly after that, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's kind of a light trade in order to get him, just because it's like, okay, only one left. You got a day to think about it. You got a day to make trades. Somebody's coming up after 33 overall to get Bo Nix if they need a quarterback, because that's going to be the best spot for him. So if Penix doesn't go, I think, in other words, I don't think it'll be five. I think it's going to be four or six. Mm-hmm. And neither would really surprise me. And I wouldn't have great faith in either of those last two quarterbacks. And, you know, history shows us we definitely shouldn't have a whole lot of faith in the fifth or sixth quarterback taken in the draft. It's not impossible, but, you know, it teams that don't have a quarterback, they need a quarterback. And you got some things to like between both of them. I'm just not sure they're guys that are going to improve a whole lot over the next amount of time. You'd love to have a guy for 15 years take care of the position for you so you don't have to address it again. But that's a luxury problem that only a few teams have. And that's because of availability. You know, it's not going to be picks or Nix or Penix probably providing that for anybody. Just my opinion now. Come back and show it to me next year if I'm completely wrong and one of them is an MVP heading into October. I mean, weird things have happened.
Yeah. Then there's the case of Marvin Harrison Jr. A lot of people, a lot of scouts are saying neighbors of LSU may now get picked in front of him. We'll see. I mean, it's up to whatever team has a choice. And Adunzie is really good as well, as you pointed out, from Washington. But Harris did something that was really different. He didn't do anything. He did not participate at the combine. He didn't participate in Pro Day. He didn't run a 40. Now, look, it's not as if, you know, Harris is probably high 4.3s, because anybody that, because, I mean, they have these sensors now. He's run 22 miles an hour on the field. You obviously can run. What do you think about that approach by him?
I think it's probably exactly what I would have advised him to do. The only reason he's not in the running for the top pick is, in my opinion, because he's not a quarterback. You need to take that position. Caleb Williams is a fantastic prospect. Caleb Williams has more downside than Marvin Harrison does by a comfortable margin. That's not an insult to Williams at all. It's the difficulty of the position. It's how difficult it is to evaluate it. But I think you can get a pretty strong parallel between a guy playing in college at the wide receiver position compared to what he's going to face at the NFL level. I think they get that fairly well. You know, there are things to like about guys, and you get into defining what a team is going to look at in whatever round. I mean, just you look at the Rams, for example, very excited to take Puka Nacua in the fifth round. But by any account, anyone would have described him as a fourth round or a fifth round pick. It's not because they don't think he's any good. It's just that he doesn't have certain characteristics that would probably put him up a little bit higher than that. Fifth round pick is not a bad thing. It's not an afterthought. It's just a mid-round pick. And if you look at his makeup, he doesn't have, you know, elite level traits. You know, he's a big dude, but he's not outstandingly large. His measurables, his speed isn't anything exceptional. He's a good football player, and you're drafting good football players in the fifth round. Harrison lead at everything, in my opinion. The only possible, somewhat, maybe, you're an idiot if you bring this up, knock, that you could have on him is he's not the biggest guy, but it's not a problem if you watch him play. He doesn't need that to go out and make plays. He had nothing left to prove is really what it comes down to in my mind. I don't think there is a discernible flaw in his game at his age that's not going to get ironed up pretty quickly when he's just focused on this. The team has their coaching around him. He's going to spend a lot of time getting better, watching film probably in a different way. The sky is the limit with him. So in my mind, he's the first non-quarterback who's going to go. But again, I think I'll take Neighbors. And the reason I say that is you get a lot of the same stuff with Neighbors, but Neighbors is—he's a competitor. He's
mean. You know what I think. You know what I think Neighbors can be in the league. I think he'd be Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. He's got the versatility and the quickness. You wouldn't necessarily think. He, like, similar to Harrison, he's not ginormous, but he's not small.
Right.
His size really kind of exemplifies the all-around type of player that he is. But I don't think there's anything he couldn't do as a skilled position player on the field. His athleticism is unreal, but more than anything with him, he's competitive. I think there's a streak in him that may or may not come out in film as much when you're trying to, you know, really isolate and break down his physical ability. He plays the game with an edge, which I think that's a good comparison. You see Debo in a similar vein. You know, he's tough. It's not just because he's got a thicker build as a receiver, but he has the competitive will to take on that role, to take on those extra duties and do the best with it that he can. I think Nabers, over time, I would put Caleb Williams in this group, too. I think this is the best way to describe it. Over the next 3 years, however you want to define really good, 3 years, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, and Malik Nabers, which one of them is going to the Pro Bowl first, and which one would go to multiple Pro Bowls?
Right.
In my mind, the way that I line it up, in a lot of ways, I think it's between Nabers and Harrison, but I think Nabers could have the edge over 3 years. You know, I think he's at that level, and I think this might be my own bias because I think he's going to Los Angeles, and I think whichever one goes to Los Angeles is going to have a pretty impressive rookie season, rightfully earned, whereas go to Arizona, I'm not sure that's going to necessarily be the case. But you're looking at three high-end prospects, probably, in my opinion, the three best in this draft, and all of them have very bright futures in playing a multitude of different roles. I think there's not a thing Harrison can't do. I think you could feature your passing game around him. I think you're able to get him 9-plus targets a game as a rookie. I think you could have him returning kicks if you wanted to do that. He has that much ability. I think Arizona goes with him because if you need to come up with a deciding factor, I think they'd probably lean on the bloodline. I think NFL sure. teams are kind of known to do that. They're going to appreciate the fact that they think they can project a good sense of the kind of player he is by looking at his dad, which obviously is unfair, but it's incredible praise considering how good his dad was. I think his son can be even better than that. He's got that kind of ability, but and I think Nabers is my guy. I keep trying to talk myself out of it. But, it'll be fun to watch both of them. I'm a receivers guy. I really like the way both of them play.
And Adunzie is really good too. But I mean, Harrison.
Yep, we even get into him. He's a legitimate top 10 pick.
Yep,
he's an afterthought. That's how good the other two are.
Right.
You know, Adunzie doesn't have he's not as well rounded, but dude's a beast over the top. He's an outside the numbers guy. He's competitive with the ball in the air. There's a lot to like about him as well. I think think of it like this: if you're the New York Jets, if you believe Aaron Rodgers can come out and play, you got a real tough problem to decide between a good slot seam running quasi tight end in Brock Bowers and Rome Odunze, another deep threat to put around another good all around receiver in Garrett Wilson. They're going to get a lot better offensively if that's the way that the board drops to them. And Odunze being the third receiver taken, that high in the draft, that's pretty impressive.
I was asked on another show last week about Olu Fashanu. And, you know, I was talking about him as a pass protector. He didn't give up any hurries, let alone now give up a sack. You know, and I said, look, does he have to be better in the run game? Yeah, he's got to be a better finisher in the run game. You know, I gave him a pretty realistic feel about him as a player. Well, then I was asked this question, that Olu has 8.5-inch hands, and does that affect him in the run game? And I sat there, and it's fine to ask the question. I have no problem with the question. But to me, that was like the ultimate we're overthinking the draft too much question, aren't we?
I would agree. I was trying to come up with a joke in my head. I don't have 8.5-inch hands, and I can't run blocks, so it must be true, right? I mean, there are issues with hand size, you know, right. which is more to say it's not a detriment, but bigger hands means more control on a defender.
Sure.
I don't think at the size that he is, that the feet that he has,
right?
I don't think he's giving up a whole lot. It just might be the deciding factor between him and, say, Alt.
Right.
I can see where that comes up, but I think Fashanu is a fascinating player. There's a lot to really like about him, but it is kind of odd. He doesn't quite have the measurables you think he would have when you watch him play. You know, right. He's got great feet, great balance. He's such a good athlete.
Yes, he is.
There's a lot that you can do with him. And if you're a team that wants to throw the ball, if you're a team that wants to play in quick game, I think he is an asset in the sense that he can get to the second level. Now, you're going to talk about your run blocking up close. There's a difference, you know, getting inside of a guy and driving him like a sled and throwing him into the sideline and being a 6'6", 310-pound wall moving down the field. You know, he doesn't have to engage to be an effective blocker in a quick game scheme. And I think that's the kind of thing that you could use him for. Put him on the left side, make it kind of ambidextrous of where you would go. Otherwise, get him out of space. You know, he can move. That's as much an asset than anything. And if you watch the blockers in that, if they can, you get a chance to pancake a guy, they're going to. But it's still zone. It's a zone concept. They're moving from you know, inside to out. You get him upfield, that wall is there. And the running back is trained to read that block. So really, if he's in the way, he doesn't have to engage anybody. So in my mind, if you get a team that wants to throw short a lot, use that as an extension of the run game, which is, you know, a lot of teams in the NFL, I think he's valuable. But I don't think I'm downgrading his run blocking ability based on the size of his hands.
I had no problem with the question.
Bend a little bit and drive those hands into guys. That'll probably help more than the actual hand size will. That's just me.
I had no problem with the question, but I sat back and thought, man, are we starting to overthink this or what?
I've never heard that. I'm going to use that with people. I'll feed you the reactions that I get. I'm going to ask somebody that.
Yeah, go ahead. Do that. Because, I mean, that's one thing about my show. Nobody's ever accused me of thinking, let alone overthinking. All right, so, Neil, appreciate you as always, my friend. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. You guys have a good one.
And this half hour has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They're the best in the business because they take care of your insurance needs, make sure you're fully covered, and they make sure that they save you money wherever they can. It is all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection, imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities. You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your year of patronage.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this final half hour of the show, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studios, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Todd Zielicki, great podcast called The Philly Show. Probably stayed up all night coming up with the name. With Jim Salisbury and Ruben Amaro Jr. It's like people ask, the Steve Jones Show. Like, yeah, we're up for 3 weeks coming up with that.
Exactly right. It works, though, Steve.
Hey, Todd, first of all, thanks for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
They've won seven in a row here. So what are some of the common denominators that you're seeing that's allowed them to build this as they take on Cincinnati next?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and it's the most important thing, is the starting pitching. The starting pitching has been absolutely amazing over this seven-game winning streak. I think the Phillies starters have a 0.51 ERA in this winning streak, and overall this season, the rotation has like a 2.2 something. So it was second best rotation in baseball for the season, an ERA under one. In this winning streak, and you know, Ranger Suarez is just absolutely been amazing. He's really elevated his game. 25 consecutive scoreless innings. Zach Wheeler is being Zach Wheeler. Christopher Sanchez is picking up where he left off last season, and Aaron Nola, he had that bad first start of the season. He has picked it up since then as well, and the best $2 million bargain, you know, in recent memory, Spencer Turnbull, has also been fantastic pitching in place to Taiwan Walker. So you add all that together, you have a fresh bullpen when they come in because they're not pitching that much, and the offense is picked up. But really, the starting pitching, you know, I can't talk enough about the starting pitching. It has been just fantastic.
And what you bring up, Todd, about the bullpen part, you've got starters going deeper into games because of their pitch efficiency. What long-term effect can that have when we're talking about July and August where maybe the bullpen's needed more?
It's huge. It's, you know, it everything kind of adds up over the course of the season. So if, you know, the starters were struggling the first month of April,
man, these relievers, you know, even the first week, they were pitching a lot, and Rob Thompson was getting killed because, you know, he wouldn't pitch guys 3 days in a row, or this guy wasn't available because he had pitched three out of the previous four games. And now these guys are rested more, and that cumulative effect, if it continues like this, the impact is potentially huge. You know, you have fresher arms later in the season, and then most importantly, of course, you have fresher arms in the postseason, which is really what they're shooting for.
All right, because that brings up something that I've always thought that was important, that a manager not only needs to manage the situation, they also need to manage the game, and they also need to manage the season. And it's that last part that I don't think enough people talk about with a manager. What's your thought on that?
Oh, I agree 100%, and that's why a manager, you know, I guess gets paid what he gets paid, and why a manager gets criticized so much, because I think not enough people keep that in the back of their mind. So Rob Thompson has a rule, first, I don't know, two, three, 4 months of the season, really probably the first two, three months of the season, he will not pitch a reliever 3 days in a row. It doesn't matter if Jose Alvarado threw one pitch on Monday and 10 pitches on Tuesday, he will not pitch him on Wednesday. And he will not do that because he knows how much that can grind down a pitcher. Even if he just threw one pitch, getting up, warming up, coming into the game 3 days in a row early in the season can be very taxing. And so he will do that. The manager, you know, Rob Thompson specifically, has gotten a lot of criticism the first week of the season, you know, because he plays Whit Merrifield in left field over Brandon Marshall. How can you possibly not play Brandon Marsh every day? He needs to figure out if he's an everyday player. How can you not play Bryson Stott every single game? Mm-hmm. And he should be an everyday player. True. But you also need to play Whit Merrifield every once in a while, Edmundo Sosa every once in a while. You need to play Garrett Stubbs every once in a while, Christian Pache every once in a while. So if an injury happens, or if there's a pinch-hitting situation late in the game, those guys actually have a chance of getting a base hit. So the manager takes a lot of heat for that, but I have absolutely no problem with the way that Rob Thompson has handled his bullpen or his bench, with the idea, again, like you said, Steve, that you know, this stuff will pay off potentially in August, September, and October.
And Todd, I was talking to somebody about another team, another player, and I said, usually the second year of a long-term contract, you see the player take off because they're more relaxed, because they feel like in the first year they've got to prove that they're going to earn the money. Trey Turner's hitting .340 right now. Now, how relaxed is he in terms of overall demeanor, play, at the plate, everything?
I think he's, you know, probably mentally in a much different space, I mean, without a doubt, than he was at this point last year. You know, you signed a $300 million contract, and, you know, he did take less money to come to Philly, so, you know, he definitely wanted to come to Philly. It's not like he took the most money, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I can handle Philly. Like, he knew what he was getting into, but still, that said, you want to do well. You know, you want to make a good first impression. You know, Nick Castellanos, his first season in 2022 wasn't very good. Last year he made the All-Star team. He didn't finish great, but he made the All-Star team. So I think there is a lot to do with that. Whit Merrifield signed a one-year, $8 million deal. He's talked about that a lot recently. He homered on Sunday, his first extra base hit of the season. But, you know, he gave a great quote to Matt Gelb from The Athletic, basically saying, you know, it's kind of like in high school, you're trying to impress the girl. And, you know, while you're trying to impress the girl, you stumble all over yourself. And and I think that's Whit Merrifield, another great example, that guy trying to make a good first impression, starts out slowly. Oh, my gosh, I got a hit. Well, you can't go in the batter's box obsessing about that. You have to let your natural ability take over, and sometimes guys get away from that. So it's good to see Trey doing that. I mean, if Trey can keep this up, even if he hits just anything over 300, I mean, what a huge boost to the lineup it'll be over 162-game season.
How's the team been defensively to this point? Because everybody will always talk about hitting. They'll talk about pitching. But if you play solid defense, I mean, I was at the Pirates game the other day where I watched the team with the better lineup. That was the Pirates. They had the better lineup. I have no idea was in the Red Sox lineup. I know he's on the IL. I know all the guys on the IL. They're actually like names. But they made so many defensive mistakes in the game, they lost the game 6-1. So how have the Phillies been defensively?
The Phillies actually, and that's kind of a you know, not a lot of people, you're right, focused on defense, but it's so important. And this Phillies defense is probably the best I can remember in recent years. You know, for so many years, it was so bad. I mean, so bad, this defense, infield, outfield. But this season, you know, everybody looks at the defense, the new defensive metrics differently. Some people put a lot of stock in them. Some people put zero stock in them. I'm kind of in the middle. I think it kind of gives you a rough estimate of how well a team is playing. If you look at some of those modern metrics, like outs above average, defensive runs saved, the Phillies have one of the better infield defenses right now. Bryce Harper has been tremendous at first base. Bryson Stott's a potential Gold Glove winner. Trey Turner has improved. He had a bad year last year by his standards, and he said it himself, he had a bad year. And I think Alec Boehm has really come a long way defensively at third base. You know, think back to where he was a few years ago. I mean, people are crushing him and making jokes about how bad he was defensively. Boy, this guy's the worst defensive third baseman I've ever seen. And now I would say he's at least average, and that's tremendous. And then center field, you have Johan Rojas, who I think is the best Phillies defensive outfielder in a generation, at least. I talked with Larry Boa about Johan Rojas in spring training. I said, is he as good as Gary Maddox, who won 8 Gold Gloves? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, he's right up there with Gary Maddox. I said, is he better than Maddox? He says, I'm not ready to go there yet. But that's high praise from Larry Boa.
And I agree with that. It's interesting about Boehm because, you know, besides doing Penn State football, basketball, I also broadcast the State College Spikes. Well, Boehm started out as the third overall pick at Williamsport. So I did a lot of Alex games his first season in pro ball. And that's what I told everybody. Defensively, I said he's stiff. He doesn't bend down. I said he's going to be a problem unless he straightens it out. And now I look at him today, and I mean, Todd, I feel like he's a fluid player out there, and I think that's a 180 from what I originally saw.
Totally. You know, you don't – when a ball is hit to third base now, his first couple years, you're like, he's probably – maybe he'll catch this.
Yeah.
He'll make a good throw. Where now you kind of expect him to make the play. He's not going to make every play. He had an error last night. It was actually ruled a hit, but it was an error. It's a play he typically will make. So he's going to have his little bumps here and there. But yeah, I mean, from where he was, and you're right. And I remember when he got drafted, scouts were saying this guy is not going to stick at third base. There's no way he is going to stick at third base. He's just not good enough. And now he's here, and he is good enough.
On paternity leave is Bryce Harper. How long might he be out?
he's supposed to be back for the series finale here in Cincinnati on Thursday. So the next two games he'll miss. Now it's funny because we just talked about Boehm playing third base. I'm guessing that Boehm will move over to first base tonight and tomorrow night. And then you'll have probably Edmundo Sosa or Whit Merrifield play third base. But yeah, Bryce will be back on Thursday.
Right. Look, to me, even if he has a tough day at the plate, he's worth the price of admission because he plays so hard. You know, where is he right now? And we're talking at this point, he would be 16 months removed from the surgery. So where is he right now?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, he's 100% healthy. And he's moving around real well. The elbow is a non-factor. I think where he is, you know, he would tell you that he's not happy with his swing right now, or he's not quite there yet. But he's, you know, I think he's hitting some tough luck a little bit. But he's, boy, defensively, Bobby Dickerson's the Phillies infield coach, and I remember last May the Phillies were in San Francisco, and Bobby was really hitting them some fungos. Pretty good ones from all around the diamond to kind of mimic one hoppers, two hoppers to first base. And Bryce was making every play. And I asked Bobby after that workout, pregame workout in San Francisco, I said, so what do you think? And he's like, I'm not saying now, but I am telling you, this guy can win the Gold Glove. I absolutely believe he can win the Gold Glove. He's like, I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. He might never win it. I'm just saying I think he has the ability to win the Gold Glove. And I agree. I think he's going to be in the conversation for a Gold Glove this year if he keeps playing the way he is.
It's interesting about Rojas because he is, you mentioned about the comparison to Gary Maddux, which is, I think, apropos. Offensively, same thing. I saw him at Williamsport. You could see defensively he glides the ball.
Yeah.
He takes great routes. Right? But offensively, like managers find religion when he goes to the plate. Right? So where is he offensively right now? And how does Rob manage around it if at all?
Well, Johan had that. He hit very well in the regular season last year, like a month and a half. I think he hit over 300, but then he was terrible in the postseason. Just swung at everything, missed everything. He was god awful in the postseason. He'd tell you that. Spring training didn't hit much better. I makes the team because they said they saw enough improvements out of him. Well, the first 10 games of the season, 11, 12 games of the season, he was not doing very well. And in the conversation, it started to turn to, how long is the leash going to be on Johan Rojas? But then, lo and behold, since then, he's actually been hitting the ball really well. It's like the last 9 or 10 games, he's hitting over 300. He hit a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, letter-high fastball, last night off of Hunter Green to right center field for a triple. And, I don't know if he does that the first week of the season. So what I kind of tell people about Johan Rojas is the other 8 guys in the lineup theoretically could all be all-stars if they have, like, really good years.
Yeah.
Certainly Turner, Harper, Schwarber, Real Muto, right? Stott has a breakout year, Bohm has a breakout year. They don't need Johan Rojas to hit 300 or even 250. And I said this the other day, and somebody killed me. Like, you're accepting mediocrity from the Phillies 90-hood. I'm like, no, I'm not. What I'm saying is, if Johan Rojas, for example, hits 225 with a 650 OPS, that's not very good. But I bet you if you look at the average 9-hole hitter in Major League Baseball, it's probably pretty close to average. Mm-hmm. If he's the average 9-hole hitter, whatever those numbers are, with his defense, he's worth playing every day. His defense is that good. And I bet you if you asked Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, who do you want playing center field every day? Even if he's hitting 225, they would say, I want Johan Rojas because he's going to save us a lot of runs.
If you just look at the batting average and make that mistake, you are not a total baseball watcher. The number of runs he saves, the number of bases he cuts off, right? That saves a pitcher and saves an inning, it has value. Now, if he's hitting under 200, now the value diminishes, but he's doing enough. I do have to ask you about the arm issue in baseball right now. They blame the pitch clock and so forth. I'm like, Todd, how much of this has to do with the fact that a lot of these guys go out and they're told to throw as hard as they can for as long as they're out there? Does that have something to do with this?
I think that has most of everything to do with it. Now, does everything play a role? I've heard some pitchers say, well, now they can't use sticky stuff to grip the ball, so now they have to grip the ball tighter. That's tightening my tendons when I release the ball, my ligaments when I release the ball. I'm sure there's something to that. I'm sure there's maybe something to the fact that you don't have as much time to recover after throwing a max effort pitch. But I think if you look at the increase in UCL injuries over the last 20 years with the increase of velocity and the increase of breaking ball usage, I think that correlates as much as anything, personally. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know but I look at those things and I say guys are throwing harder than ever. And the body is, your arm is not built to throw 100 miles an hour. It's just not. So you keep throwing 100 miles an hour. And that's why I think, I don't know what's going to happen with Paul Skenes in Pittsburgh, but I've looked for his first three minor league starts. He's only been around 60 pitches, 3 innings. Is he going to be able to throw 6 innings for 100 pitches in the big leagues? It's going to be interesting to see how he handles that.
Well, the Pirates were here for several years before the Cardinals came back, and they are notorious in that organization for pitch counts for their minor league pitchers. I mean, notorious for it. And I'm not so sure it works. I mean, to be honest with you, Maddux and Glavin seem to not miss any starts. So,
right.
I don't know.
Right. And that's what's kind of interesting about the Phillies' rotation, to be honest with you, because I was just looking up this today. The five Philly starters right now combined, all five combined, four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, they rank 24th in baseball in average velocity.
Yep.
So this is not a rotation that throws hard. This is a rotation that generally knows how to pitch.
Yes.
Move in and out, up and down, change speeds.
Yep.
And they're not, you know, nobody on this staff is throwing 98-mile-an-hour fastballs. They're, you know, Ranger Suarez is 91-92. Aaron Nola is 91-92. Tywan Walker, and he comes back, you know, he's going to be 88-89-91. You know, it's Spencer Turnbull's 91-92. But they can all locate, and they can all mix speeds and change speeds and locate. And it's not a bad way to win.
Yeah, it's not a bad way to win. And also, like, you know, if let your defense do a little bit of work, and if they do their job, you're fine.
All right. Exactly right.
Todd, an absolute pleasure. As always, everybody can tune in to the Philly Show with Jim Salisbury, Ruben Amaro Jr., and Todd as well. Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime, Steve. Thanks. Take care.
Todd Zielecki. All right. Jerry Dulac tomorrow. Come back. Wrap it up in a moment. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Suit was at the Yankees game yesterday behind the New York dugout. Then suddenly Aaron Boone got tossed out. And I guess the exact quote from the suit was, "My job's done, let's go get a beer."
Wasn't wrong.
I gotta give him credit.
I mean, they never recovered. The A's won.
To be that quick and efficient. Wow. Fun show today. More tomorrow. Thanks to Neil Coulong, Todd Zielecki, Matt Cotrillo for being on. Tomorrow, Jerry Dulac. Tomorrow is the opening round of the NFL draft. Already, the suit is sweating over the Steelers pick. Been pacing back and forth in the office after his trip to New York yesterday. He had just enough time to get Boone thrown out.